And that is a one.
A one. Garrett, the topic we will be discussing today is, how do you run a game in 2 hours or less? And can I just say that was a really delicious die roll that you got there.
Yes, I tried very hard.
Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. My name is Andy Rao, and I'm normally joined by my co-host Chris. Chris is not here today. No one knows where Chris is. We'll leave you in suspense. But in the meantime, we got a great pinch hitter here to come in and chat with me, and his name is Garrett. Garrett, say hi and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello. It's an honor to get off the bench and get in the game.
Did I use the right term? Is that a pinch hitter? I'm not a sports person.
Yes. Yeah. Technically, that would be I'm only a baseball person. So we're very lucky.
Okay.
But
all right.
That would be when the pitcher goes to bat. Normally, pitchers aren't very good at batting, so they get a guy to pinch hit for him.
Okay. All right. That's not what I thought it meant, but it still works. So
yeah.
So yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself, Garrett.
I am a game player out in Chicagoland. I've been playing games since high school, middle school with, I always like to shout out, the first role-playing game I ever played was Ars Magica 3rd Edition.
Oh, man. People, I know some people listening to this podcast that just got really excited. Which edition was that?
The 3rd edition.
Okay.
Yeah, when it was like the old like White Wolf era of like, yeah. Okay, roll to hit, now roll for the region, now roll for gangrene. Like,
now, I know about Ars Magica. I have sort of a healthy but somewhat distant respect for it. Is it as intimidating to run as my brain tells me it is whenever I flip through the rule book?
So I ran it once years later, but I ran 5th edition, which was a lot less intimidating. 3rd edition, I remember even as a player, even as like a young person sort of looking at the book and being like, I don't have to know what this means. It was dense.
Yeah.
You know, like this is the kind of book where they're like, hey, we're also going to include a chapter on a very sort of real and accurate history of Europe. And that is part of the game, and you should know all that.
Are you a history nerd?
Not at all.
Okay, that's even more impressive then. I'm pretty impressed. When was the last time you ran Ars Magica?
I ran the 5th edition in college. So that was in my dorm room. And I remember because somebody had found a copy of Hero Quest, the old board game.
Yeah.
And it got us all very like, oh, cool. Are there more games like this? And I went to a local game store and found this copy of the Ars Magica and ran it for a shortish campaign, but very fun. Very fun.
Is that a hard sell in a world where, you know, D&D and D&D-ish games really dominate not just the market, but sort of the brain space that most of us have? Whereas Ars Magica has a really different approach, mm-hmm. right? You've got this troop style play where you might be running multiple characters and creating new characters on the fly, right? Am I right about that? Was that
yes.
a hard sell to a D&D world, or did that click really well with college students?
I think it helped that it was not yet fully a D&D sort of crew that I was pitching it to. It was people that were like, I've heard of these games, I've never played any of them. And so, in a sense, it was the easiest sell in the world because I was the only one willing to sit down and run it, run anything.
That helps when you're the only one willing to GM.
Yeah. But I think, like, if I was to do it again today, it might be a harder sell because it is a very different set of expectations.
Yeah.
I remember, too, a big thing of the game is you play over, like, a long period of time because you play like wizards. But if you want to learn a new spell, like as opposed to D&D where you're like, okay, you leveled up, you learned a new spell. Great, you're done. This one is like, hey, this, depending on the level of spell you want to learn, it's going to take this number of seasons where you can't go on adventures because you're just in your tower learning your spell.
That is amazing.
Which is why they have the troop play so that you can say, okay, well, I won't play my wizard character for the next 3 adventures. Instead, I'll send you know, his yeoman or whatever.
Now, you're in Chicagoland. That local game store wasn't Games Plus, was it?
No. So technically, when I started play this, I was in Bloomington Normal, Illinois. So an even smaller, pool to pull from. But no, I have not been to Games Plus. Maybe I should get out there more.
Okay. I haven't been there in a couple of years either. But back when I lived in Chicago, I had never seen a game store that big and with so much stuff, and it had a giant used section. I mean, it was going to, it was like going to doing a trip to Toys R Us when you were a kid. We have some good local game stores. I'm here in West Michigan, but nothing on the Games Plus like level where I think they have, at least, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s when I was there, it felt like they had a copy of every game that had ever been published. Like, so
yeah. Oh man. I'll shout out Dice Dojo. That's my go-to.
Okay.
Anyone come to Chicago, go to Dice Dojo. Tell them Garrett sent you. They won't know me.
Do they have a community of people that like play in the store?
They do. You know,
is it pretty active?
It's pretty. Yeah. I mean, to the point where I've wanted to just like run a one shot and borrow one of their tables. And I called them and said, hey, when's a good day to come by when you're not like running stuff? And the guy could hear the person on the other end go, I mean, like on a holiday if we're still open.
Oh,
so
man.
It's a very, very active. And I mean, you know, more obviously they have like Magic the Gathering tournaments lots of miniatures battles and all sorts of stuff. But it's a good sign. You know, I'll find tables.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so hey, you have done some game design work of your own, and I apologize for taking such a meandering path to getting here. But why don't you tell us what you are doing? You have a Kickstarter that wrapped up not too long ago. Tell us what's going on in your game creation world.
The Kickstarter for Wayne Scotting's Guide to the Very Small Folk wrapped some time ago. That was part of the zine quest sort of thing. Originally, it started as me talking to a friend and saying out loud, like, yeah, one of these years I'll jump into zine quest. And he just said, do it this year. and I stuttered through excuses and he said, no. And so he and I partnered up because I wrote the game and then he did like layout and design for it. And so we're currently in the process of finishing tidying up the PDF, and then the digital version will go out. We'll do some printing, and then for backers at a certain level, we have built some working contraptions. Game is sort of based on like the Borrowers type of world, like tiny folks living in big folks' houses, and you build and craft things as part of the game.
Man.
So we have built some actual like working contraptions that will be mailed out to people.
So one thing I loved about your Kickstarter when I was looking through the campaign, I really love the viewpoint you take where one of these creatures is like actually your consultant on the game, and this is I just love the way I just botched my description of that, but people, if you go to the Kickstarter and read, you'll see what I mean.
Yes. So it came from reading so many different games and so many different supplements that are these vast descriptions of worlds that all kind of inevitably have this like anthropologist voice to them, which I think is something that I notice more than others. So in my day job is I work for a science museum in Chicago. And so I'm reading like a fair amount of text intentionally in that voice. And so to hear it in fantasy worlds, I was like, this is interesting that this is the default. And so we wanted to, for Wayne Scotting, we wanted to have a very specific point of view to the world. So we are the editors. He is the writer, Mr. Wayne Scotting. And so he's got like specific opinions, which is fun because you're reading a book that's essentially biased information, where there's this person telling you about their world, and like one thing he talks about a lot is wanting to bridge the cultural divide of big folk and small folk. And then clearly has not spent any time learning about big folk culture other than he's like, yeah, you guys eat hamburgers and that's fine.
Well, that's awesome. So yeah, listeners, go check it out. Is it going to be generally available to the public at some point when the Kickstarter parts of it wrap up?
Yes. the intention is that the at least the digital version will be on my like my itch store and hopefully other places if I can figure it out. And honestly, my goal too is we're going to print extra copies and just if we see people at cons, like find opportunities to just kind of hand them out, just get them into people's hands.
Well, that's great. I wish you luck with that. Did I see a mention on the Kickstarter that you've done a few other smaller game projects?
I do. I have a couple small on my itch store right now. I have a postcard game called Not a Deer, where you flip coins to determine whether something you see is a deer or something worse.
that sounds delightful.
And then my bigger one that is one of my go-to con games is called I'm In. It's a one-shot heist game that plays using the rules of blackjack. High sort of improv and comedy heavy, but is always a delight to bring new people into. Is very silly.
Is that something you can play like without any prep?
Specifically because part of the game is you draw cards to determine like what you're stealing and what obstacles are in front of you. So there's always kind of a Looney Tunes-esque energy of like, I think the last time I played, what were we stealing? We were stealing enough money to pay our debts. And, it was the recipe for the perfect souffle. That's right. From a wizard who lived in Big Ben.
Oh, man.
And, yeah.
Okay, that sounds super fun.
It's a good one.
All right. Well, I've got a list of your stuff that I need to go check out when we're done recording here. Let's go ahead and move into our topic, if you're okay with that.
I'm ready.
And a little bit of background. I don't know if there's anyone in the world who is still listening to this podcast who was also listening like 6 years ago. But if that's you, first of all, you're a freaking legend. Secondly, you'll notice that this is a topic we have done before, we've talked about before. Specifically, this is one of the earliest topics that we did when this podcast launched in the far back in the pre-pandemic days. So I thought it would be fun. First of all, a lot of time has passed, so me and Chris might have some different perspectives on these questions. But also, we now have an awesome new voice here to talk about these things, to maybe help us unpack them in a way that we weren't able to before. So as a reminder, the question that Garrett rolled that we talked about is, how do you run a game in 2 hours or less? And so I'll just start it out by asking you, Garrett, have you run a game in 2 hours or less?
Oh, yes. So we were talking before recording started about the various topics, and I mentioned that if I got this one, I'm uniquely suited to answer it because I have a weekly game group that specifically meets for 2 hours each Wednesday.
Wow, we didn't even set that up. I saw him roll the dice, people, on the video
it's
camera.
It's true.
Yeah. So what is that like? You said it's a weekly game that's 2 hours?
Yes. And so we rotate like who runs the game, and we've played different systems, but whenever it's, you know, been my turn, that idea of like, okay, I'm running a campaign and I have 2 hours, and realistically I have an hour and 45 minutes because at least 15 minutes gets eaten up goofing around at the beginning.
Sure.
As is law.
Of course. Yes.
And so, it's been really interesting to kind of in a way have that become my default, and then talk to other people who are like, well, we usually run 3 to 4 hours as the average. And I get to go, oh, what's that like?
Yeah. It's interesting. Maybe like you, I mean, when those of us who got into gaming when we were younger, so I got into gaming in like junior high, early high school, you know, at that time you can have your friends over and you can play for like 18 hours straight, right? Like it's logistically possible to do that. And like, you know, you're all young teenagers. So you just have the energy for that. And so I sometimes feel like the trajectory of my GMing has been like a slow shortening of the time I have for games from that, you know, mythical game all for the whole weekend and don't even stop to sleep stuff to now where, you know, often when I am playing games with my kids who have other stuff to do and we have busy family things going on, you know, I often am looking at between one to 3 hours. Like I don't think I have hit 3 hours in a family game with my kids in a very, you know, I don't think we've ever done it. So does the 2 hour thing now, does that feel like a really comfortable amount of time for you now? Is that, did you say, is that your default now? Like, would it feel weird now if you had a 4 hour time slot?
I think so. I run enough like games at cons or one shots outside of this group that average 3 hours. And so for me, it's recognizing, like, I think 3 hours tends to hit my limit for a session,
yeah.
at least in terms of feeling like I can bring my best self to the table.
Yeah.
I'm not getting antsy and like being like, okay, I need to go play away from the table now and like think about things and then come back. So that time frame is nice. And it helps that it's a group that's recurring, because a big part of what makes it work is we goof around for 15 minutes and then the game starts and we're in. We're like, hey, let's make the best use of this time. We only got an hour and a half, hour and 40.
Yeah. Now, you said you have run a number of different systems. Have you found, I mean, do you pick a system with that? Would you pick a game with that 2 hour time slot in mind? Like, have you played games and you're like, this system is not a good fit for a 2 hour time period? Or tell us a little bit about
that. That's definitely. So, right now, one of the other folks is running Alas for the Awful Sea, which is a Powered by the Apocalypse game. And those are actually pretty well suited to, I think, this time slot, because they're good at keeping every sort of act, you know, they tell you like only roll the dice if it's meaningful, only roll the dice if you're going to trigger a move, and we have mechanics that cover that.
Yeah.
And so it helps focus our intention to say, well, I'm going to look at my list of moves and say, what can I do to get to a dice roll, you know, to get to sort of trigger things and have fun things happen.
Yeah. So I come from like a pretty traditional role-playing background, you know, like I learned D&D and Rollmaster and those old kind of sturdy, stodgy types of games. And so for me, you know, I was coming into adulthood where the time for gaming is shrinking for various, most, you know, usually good reasons. But I'm also used to these systems where like a fight against four goblins can take like an hour and a half. And like, so if you were to say to me, you know, if you were to say, well, we only have 2 hours to game, I, you know, it would be like a panic moment. Like, we're not going to get, we're going to play for a year and we're not going to be through, you know, the first part of this adventure. I mean, I'm well familiar that there are a lot of games that do not have hour and a half combat or whatever sequences. But for me, a couple of years ago, I ran, Band of Blades for a little while, which is a Blades in the Dark spinoff. And and I had set the goal to respect the time of all of the people that were joining. It was an online game. I had set the goal that we would do it in 2 hours. And I was amazed that when you really truly lean into, you make a choice to like lean into the game saying only roll when it's important, you can accomplish an enormous amount in 1 or 2 hours. As long as you are all making the conscious choice of don't turn this into a dice thing unless it is important, in which case, yes, absolutely break out the dice. But yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I was actually going to say one of the games I'd shout out as good for this time slot is Blades in the Dark. I think that has, partly because it has a built-in structure. I don't know Band of Blades as well, but Blades in the Dark has that structure of plan a heist, execute a heist, have some downtime.
Yes.
And it ended up working pretty perfectly that we would do like, you know, planning a heist and starting a heist in one session, and then the next session finishing the heist and doing downtime. And sometimes a heist would take a full session longer or whatever, especially towards the end of the game as we were getting into some bigger things.
Yeah, Band of Blades has a similar structure like that. Yeah, there's the mission phase, and then there's like a big bookkeeping back at home base type of phase.
And I think that helps too, especially when those downtime phases have definite mechanics, is we all got really efficient at downtime phases of like, well, I know it's coming, I know what I want to do, so when it comes time to do it, I'm ready to just say, here's what I'm doing, let's roll some dice, let's have a scene.
Yeah.
And I will say too, for any folks who are hearing this structure and saying, well, you're rushing through all the scenes that I really like, And I like taking my time. And I'll say too, like we were able to do that too. I think it does just like force you to cut out parts that you in hindsight might have said, I didn't need to do that.
Yeah. It has made me think about how many times in a typical game session do the players get to like make a choice or take a meaningful action? I think coming from a traditional gaming perspective, there is this assumption that, you know, if they're making an important choice or taking an important plot, significant action, that you kind of honor that by then spending like 2 or 3 hours. That must be a scene that you need to play through all the details, right? But
yeah,
if you can let go of that need to go through all the details and just ask what is the choice that's being made. I mean, you can actually, if as long as everyone's on the page, you can actually just make that choice. And in my experience, you do not really lose any, you do not usually lose anything for not making it a 3-hour scene. Yeah. When you are playing out a scene in depth, obviously you get fun, unexpected moments and those can be mm-hmm. like special, but you know, it's kind of a trade-off. That makes me think I was going to ask you. So if you had someone come up to you and say, look, I've got this D&D group. We love playing D&D or fill in the blank kind of traditional game, you know, a combat takes an hour type of game. Yeah. And that's the only game we're going to play. And I have this short window on my lunch break or whatever. I just have an hour or two. What can I do to take this system that seems to kind of expect we'll be moving at a slow pace? How can I make this happen? Do you have any, what would you say to that person?
I'd say, hey, that must be nice having 2 hours for lunch.
I thought that as soon as I said it, I was like, everyone I know has like 20 minutes for lunch. So,
right. Yeah. I think I'm of the school of thought of like, listen, anything is viable if you're really like attached to a certain game or a certain concept or a genre. And you're like, I just want it to work. Yeah, we can make it work. A big thing that I have found is helpful for those games that have a built-in structure for certain things. So in D&D, I think like combat has a really rigorous structure, which can be really helpful. And so one trick that another game master of my youth taught me was add a timer to a combat and be really upfront about it. So not necessarily saying, okay, we have 20 minutes, although maybe, but telling players, for example, you have 10 rounds to find an ending to this combat before this person's escape vehicle is ready and they can go.
Oh, interesting.
Like, so putting a really crunchy sort of thing on it. I think it's also just being willing to talk through the structure of the game session. So one thing I like to do when I run games is at the start of it, I tell players, here's the things I'd like to try to do today. You know, not in like a spoiler, like, hey, by the way, you're going to fight this guy and you're going to deal with this puzzle. But like, I'll say, hey, I want to find a resolution to this current situation and I want to get into this next one a little bit. So those are my, and I think having that up top, telling players that you have a thing you would like to do in the time period, it helps them both feel that they have a thing to focus on, which I think a lot of players find helpful, you know, like,
yeah.
It can be intimidating to say you can go anywhere in the world. It can be extremely helpful to say you can go A, B, or C. Well, I don't think necessarily losing out on people's like creative potential, because boy, oh boy, can people still find time and ways to surprise you.
Yeah, yeah. I love that idea, actually. And I feel like so many of the questions that like that GMs have and the stress we feel, I mean, so often the solution is like have a conversation with your players about what you all want to do, because right, it's like, why is that just not the first piece of advice? You know, it's just like, just say your concern to the group and then like I'll chat out. Anyway, this fall I'll be running the Alien RPG, which I've run a couple times. So I've committed to run through a story from recreate an Alien movie, if you will, in three game nights. So that's three acts and 3 hours per game night. So we have 3 hours. Realistically, it's going to be like 2 hours and 15 minutes because we'll be eating dinner and snacks and stuff.
Yeah.
So I have already been thinking like in a quote, normal type of game I play, our group could meander through, could spend 12 hours meandering through Act One right before the whatever the trigger events are that move us to the next phase of the story. And so I've just been trying to think very much like, what and how do I want to talk to the players to let them know, like, you know, when 10 o'clock arrives, we have to have you have to have discovered the alien and done, you know, these couple of things need to have happened. And you can do anything you want as long as we find a way to make those things have happened when the clock hits 10, so we can all go home and then come back to act two next time. So yeah. I don't know. Have you ever run a game where you have had sort of a predestined ending or beat points that you simply have to hit in a certain amount of time?
I think I've definitely done a similar thing where I've set up a very specific scenario that I'm like, it is worthwhile to my, you know, I'm like, it's worthwhile to kind of put you on these tracks. Like, I'm not trying to take away your choices, but I'm saying I've come up with a really cool sort of trajectory. And what I need to do is get you on the launch pad. Once you're in the air, the world is your oyster, but I got to get you on that launch pad. And that's kind of crucial.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is really challenging, especially when you're someone like me who also sometimes gets sucked into a scene and then looks up and goes, that was 30 minutes too long.
Yeah.
Like, and
I mean, yeah, it would be one thing if it were not fun to get sucked into a scene, but that's the problem, right? Like, people are having a great time or something magical happens that you didn't expect. I have been thinking, since they'll be using pre-generated characters, about just giving the characters, instead of just big scale, like, what's your personality stuff, much more specific, like, your goal for tonight's game is to, like, to do this. Whenever you are not sure what to do, just do something to bring yourself closer to that goal. Because if all the characters are doing that, we will not have any trouble tripping all of the necessary, like, story points, I guess.
100%. I character goal is such a great way to, especially for a shorter term game, to give a player a direction to go, and then all you have to do is put your launch pads in the path of that direction.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was reading, I think it might have been Torchbearer, I don't know, it was another game where it still feels like a little bit of a novelty to me to make a player goal that just lasts for one game session, you know? Like, surely your character goal is like, I'm going to avenge the murder of my family, you know, and I'm going to reclaim my throne, you know? Like, it's a campaign goal. Like, I don't know that I've ever, like, in a D&D game, asked my players, like, write down the thing you want to do tonight before we go home, right?
Yeah, that has been a thing I have very recently been doing a little more often. I've been running like a monthly masks game, and we played for like 10 sessions. And then I finally said, I'm going to sit down with each of them and say, what do you want to be? What are things you want to do that we haven't done?
Yeah.
Like, not from a, like, I'm running out of ideas, but from kind of the opposite of saying, I see the end game. I don't want to leave this without you having an expectation you didn't get met.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like you were saying, like, it's just have those conversations with players about expectations. And I think that for 2 hour or less games as a general thing too, is a big important thing, is the players who are like, I want to do a 3 or 4 hour session. That's great. But that has a different set of expectations than we're going to do 2 hours.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how much of your 3 to 4 hour goals can we do in 2 hours realistically?
So we should move towards wrapping up. We've been chatting for a while. So is there anything about this topic or any advice you would give that we haven't touched on, like, to someone that's looking at a 2 hour game session or a whole campaign that's going to be comprised entirely of 2 hour sessions?
I think one thing that has been really useful, I don't have the author's name off the top of my head, but the game is Masks: The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And they have, I think, a really good thing they suggest is they call it hard scene framing, where they basically say you start a scene and stuff has already happened. We are already in the action. So that can be, you know, like, so examples can be, there is an armored truck careening through the streets and the players are chasing it and you are already mid-chase. Yeah. So we're doing away with all that setup, but you still have room for all the players because then you just get to go around and ask players, okay, where are you? Like, I'm on the roof of the car. I'm on the rooftops nearby. Like, I'm driving another car next to it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, again, there's no loss of agency there, but it gets you to that plot point that you need by saying we are already halfway there. So I would shout that out.
That rings so true to me too. Like it's so hard to not do that preparatory scene, you know? I was thinking of this recently because I was in prepping for this upcoming Alien game, I was looking at a past one. And one of the mistakes I made in that past one is like, there's like this opening briefing where that, you know, the players are told by their commander what the deal is. And there's no player choice. Nothing can come out of this except just getting the info. But what I found is I let it drag on. And so everyone's asking questions to dig into the details. And it's, and mm-hmm. I wasn't an adept enough GM to just say like, oh, like you have everything that you're going to get out of this scene. Like, the whole this should have taken 2 minutes and instead I let it take 45, but like I love that. So I will have to check out Masks. I've heard of other people speaking well of that, but
I really like that. That what you were just saying, if just one more thing to throw in, is making me think too. I wonder, one of the things, I run a lot of heist based games, and one of the most fun things to come out of doing that genre of action specifically is we stopped putting a plan together, because we've realized what you can always do is start the heist and flashback to the plan.
Yeah.
It's always possible to say, let's cut, you know, if your character's like, hey, I think I want to know this information, be like, great. Quick flashback of you asking that question in the briefing.
Yeah.
But that oftentimes goes much quicker and feels more kind of dramatic than actually playing through the whole of a briefing. So I just putting that together of like, oh, I guess I do run a lot of heists specifically.
Hey, that's awesome. All right. Well, hey, let's go ahead. We could keep talking about this, and it is a real pleasure to be talking to you, Garrett, but let's go ahead and wrap up for now. Thanks for sharing your insight. Go check in. You just remind us the name of your most recent Kickstarter.
Oh, yes. So Wayne Scotting's Guide to the Very Small Folk. And any of my other games are on my itch page, Gabo Gary. But if you look up like I'm in RPG, I think I'm the only one.
Fantastic. All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us. I don't think we have any other. Normally, Chris is more responsible than me and has a list of kind of wrap up details to close up. But I'm not Chris, so you're just going to get me saying farewell. So, hey, Garrett, thanks so much for joining us. Listeners, thanks for revisiting this topic with us after many years. And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.